When I look at relationships, my own and others, I see a wide range of reasons for people to be together and ways in which they are together. And I see ways in which relationship, which means something that exists between two or more people, for the most part reinforces people's separateness as individual entities. And it doesn't just honor it, it treats it as the reality of it. When I perform, or I used to perform, I don't anymore, but I used to perform weddings. I had a license for a while. The image I always have when I'm performing a wedding is the image of a triangle in which there is the two partners, and then there is this third force, this third being that emerges out of the interaction of these two. And that the third one is the one that is the shared awareness that lies behind the two of them. And that the two people in the yoga of relationship come together in order to find that shared awareness that exists behind them, in order to then dance as two, so that the two-ness brings them into one and the oneness dances as two. And that's a kind of a vibrating relationship between the one and the two, so that people are both separate and yet they are not separate. And they're experiencing that the relationship is feeding both their uniqueness as individuals and their unit of consciousness. Now, that's extremely delicate, because it's so easy to get entrenched in your own, I need this, I want this, you're not fulfilling this for me, and seeing the other as object. But the delight which all of you have experienced of being with somebody where you are sharing an awareness of the predicament you are both in, and you're sharing an awareness of the predicament, even when you're having an argument with each other, there's an awareness that you're both almost delighting in the horrible beauty of it. I don't know whether any of you have had that. I've had it quite often, you know. Because I'm around pretty conscious people a lot of the time, and we fight, you know, we have differences. But we're hating it and enjoying it both, because there's these levels that we're playing at all the time. But we come into relationship often very much identified with our needs. I need this. I need security. I need refuge. I need friendship. I need this. And all of relationships are symbiotic in that sense. We come together because we fulfill each other's needs at some level or other. The problem is that when you identify with those needs, you always stay at the level where the other person is her or him. It is satisfying that need. And it really only gets extraordinarily beautiful when it becomes us, and then when it goes behind us and becomes I. I understand that to enter into the yoga of relationship is an extremely difficult thing to do. It's the hardest yoga that I know of, actually. Because your ego is so vulnerable when you start to open up to another human being. You feel so tender and so vulnerable. And before that one place gets going strong enough, you get frightened and you pull back and you get entrenched. And that happens all the time in relationships. People that come together with the greatest meaning of feeling love, and then they get caught in their needs and their frustrations and they separate. One of the problems is that we tend to put relationships a little bit on the back burner in life. We get a relationship and then we go out to a job and we go out to other things and we sort of, well, now we've got that together, we'll go do life. And for a relationship to be a yoga of relationship is like a full-time operation for years. It's not fair to say that any relationship that isn't involved in the yoga of relationship is not useful and fulfilling to people. Because a lot of people come together because it's just really comfortable living with another person, and there's a wonderful kind of sweet intimacy, And it's fun to cook with each other and fun to sleep together, and it's fun to just live life together without trying to get too deep in as a spiritual practice. And many of those people have other spiritual practices. They go off and meditate, and one does something else, a Tai Chi or something else. And that seems fine to me. I don't think you should make believe that a relationship is really yoga unless you're willing to really put the effort into making it such. And if you are, it really fills all the space for a long time. When I'm in a relationship with somebody else, and what they do upsets me, because I understand that my life experiences are the gift of my guru in order to bring me to God, that if somebody upsets me, that's my problem. This is a hard one, because we don't usually think these ways in this culture. When I see other people, I see them as like trees in the forest. You go into the woods, and you see gnarled trees and live oaks and pines and hemlocks and elms and things like that. And you're not inclined to say, I don't like you because you're a pine and not an elm. You appreciate trees the way they are. But the minute you get near humans, you notice how quick it changes. There's a way in which you don't allow humans to just manifest the way they are. You take it personally. You keep taking other people personally. All they are mechanical runoffs of old karma. Really is what they are. I mean, they look real and they think they're real, but really what they are is mechanical runoff. So they say, rrr, see, and you karmically go, rrr. And then one of you says, we've got to work this out, and the other says, yes, we must, and then you start to work it out, and it's all mechanical. It's all conditioned stuff. So that if somebody comes along and gets to me, they get me angry or uptight or they awaken some desire in me. Wow, am I delighted. They got me. And that's my work on myself. If I'm angry with you because your behavior doesn't fill my model of how you should be, that's my problem for having models. No expectations, no upset. If you're a liar and a cheat, that's your karma. If I'm cheated, that's my work on myself. My attempting to change you, that's a whole other ballgame. What I'm saying is, I will only be happy if you are different than you are. You're asking for it. Really asking for it. Think of how many relationships you say, I really don't like that person's this. If they would only be this, if I can only manipulate them to be this, I can be happy. Isn't that weird? Why can't I be happy with them the way they are? You're a liar, a cheat, and a scoundrel, and I love you. I won't play any games with you, but I love you. It's interesting to move to the level where you can appreciate, love, and allow in the same way you would in the woods, instead of constantly bringing in that judging component, which is really rooted out of your own feelings of lack of power. Judging comes out of your own fear. Now, I fall trapped to it all the time, but every time I do, I catch myself. We have all been around so many times that every one of us has been everything with everybody else. So when I look at you, you and I have been in so many relationships together, it's just we don't remember. Do you know how many times we've been born and died? Remember that story? Buddha says, if you take a mountain 6 miles long, 6 miles wide, 6 miles high, that's the distance a bullock walks in a day. And a bird flies over the mountain once every 100 years with a silk scarf in its beak. In the length of time it takes the scarf to wear away the mountain. That's how long you've been doing this. I just think of that. Once every 100 years, the scarf goes over. A scarf and a mountain. It goes on and on and on and on. I mean, in India, there are yugas and kalpas of hundreds of thousands of years of... And then they just start cycles all over again. And we've been through all of them again and again and again and again. Now, behind all of it is the One. And that's all there is. This is all. All of us here are one in drag, appearing to be many. So we are all soul mate. There's only one of it. It's not mate because it's not even two. It's just one. There's only one of us. So what you're really doing is constantly marrying yourself. At the deepest level of God marrying God, right? Now you come down into soul. And each soul has a unique karmic predicament. You could call it a psychic DNA code that in a way guides which way its life will go. And it is entirely possible that souls, when they take birth into parents that are part of their karma, will at some point meet a being. And they have agreed in advance to come down and do this together and meet. And that's what we usually call soulmates. What you have found from your past marriages is that what you are attracted to in a person isn't what you ultimately live with. They say the honeymoon is over. And it's after the desire systems that were dominant in the relationship that have the attraction in it pass, and all of it passes. Then you're left with the work to do, and it's the same work. When you trade in one partner for another, you still have the same work you're going to have to do sooner or later when the pizzazz is over. And it just keeps going over. And you can't milk the romanticism of relationship too long as you become more conscious. It's more interesting than that. It really is. And people keep wanting to romanticize their lives all the time. It's part of the culture. But the awakening process starts to show you the emptiness of that form. And you start to go for something deeper. You start to go to meet another human being in truth. And truth is scary. Truth has bad breath at times. Truth is boring. Truth, you know, burns the food. Truth is all the stuff. Truth has anger. Truth has all of it. And you stay in it, and you keep working with it, and keep opening to it, and keep deepening it. And every time you trade in a partner, you realize that there's no good or bad about it. I'm not talking good or bad about this. But you begin to see how you keep coming to the same place in relationships. And then you tend to stop, because it gets too heavy, because your identity gets threatened too much. Because for the relationship to move to the next level of truth requires an opening and a vulnerability that you're not quite ready to make. And so you entrench, you retrench, you pull back, and then you start to judge and push away, and then you move to the next one. And then you have the rush of the openness, and then the same thing starts to happen. And so you keep saying, where am I going to find the one where this doesn't happen? And it'll only happen when it doesn't happen in you. When you start to take and watch the stuff and get quiet enough inside yourself so you can take that process as it's happening and start to work with it and keep coming back to living truth in yourself with the other person, even though it's scary and hard. The ideal, of course, is where two people work together. But in India, where many marriages are arranged and you don't even see your wife until after the wedding. I mean, they wear masks at the wedding in some villages. I don't know what they do in southern India. In North Krishna and Radha, they wear masks. And then they take off the mask and there they are for life, because there's no divorce. I mean, you don't divorce in a village. If the husband dies, the wife goes on the funeral pyre. And so this is it. This is it for life. It's got its benefits. But what's interesting about that is that when they understand dharma of relationship, there is a way in which it's like what the Marines say, that if you can change it, you change it, and if you can't, paint it. And when you can't change a marriage, you start to work with it. When you have something that you're in, like I couldn't trade my father in for another father. He was given to me. That's the given. I can't divorce my father. I can go away from him, but I can't divorce him. And what I found was, because I had to keep dealing with my father, who called me rum-dum, and who, you know, he loved me a lot, and he thought I was very sweet and well-meaning, and we were buddies, but it was weird, because he didn't really understand what I was doing. Dad was interesting work for me, because he was a given that I couldn't trade in the last years I was with him a lot. And I began to see that that was work on myself, to not judge him, not to try to change him. He was what he was. He was a perfect statement of Dad. He was absolutely perfect who he was. It was only when I had a model of how I would like my father to be that there was trouble. I wanted him not to suffer when death, so I wanted him to understand what I understood about dying. And he didn't want to understand it. And I was frustrated, because I meant well. I knew if he understood it, he wouldn't suffer. The worst problem is trying to take the suffering away from people you love. That's the stinker. You keep wanting to take away their suffering. And you don't even know why it's there in the first place. It's so interesting to allow people to be who they are. Finally, I think in relationships, you create an environment with your own work on yourself, which you offer to another human being to use to grow in the way they need to grow. Parents are an environment for their children. Lovers are an environment for their partners. Children are an environment for their parents. And you keep working, you become the soil, moist and soft and receptive, so the person can grow the way they need to grow. Because how do you know how they should grow? People have two children. One of them is a very old incarnation, an old llama who just dropped down to bless everybody. And the other one is immediately post-Neanderthal. You know, and they're siblings, and they are my children, you know, and they're two entirely different beings. So you've just got to listen to hear what a human being needs, who they need to be in a lifetime. So when you work with a situation where you don't change it, you just work on yourself a different way. The idea of manipulating the universe in order for you to be happy is just one model. The other model is manipulate your own mind till you're happy with what you got. Finally, that's the only way to do it. Because if you keep manipulating the environment, it's never right. Did you never notice that thing? I mean, I go to Kauai and, you know, in Hawaii, rent a house, get a car, have a lover, get art supplies, get fish, get... But do you notice the weather is a little clammy today? Damn it, the Jeep they gave us, it's not running on all the cylinders. That damn restaurant was closed tonight. I mean, I can watch how you can create an absolute hell out of the whole thing that was to be heaven and paradise. And then you just laugh at yourself. And then finally, the image I have, which I've told so many times, of being in Bareilly at the railway station in India, when I realized the train was going to be 2 days late. And the station was full of people who were living there. And these were families with kids that were peeing everywhere, and they had goats and chickens and vendors selling everything. I mean, it's life. It's real life in the Bareilly railway station. And I didn't have much money at that time, and I was barefoot because I was a yogi in those days. And the latrine, I had dysentery, and the latrine had stopped up maybe, a few weeks before. And so the fecal matter was sort of everywhere, and there were flies, I mean, millions of flies, and I had to go about every 15 minutes. And now, my mother raised me. She had very definite models of toilet training, and she taught me She taught me what hell was, and the closest to hell of her mind was the Bareilly railway station latrine. I mean, if she had ever seen it, that would be, she would realize she had met her fantasy. And there I was. It was interesting because I found myself sitting there, knowing I had to go to the bathroom, feeling it coming, and knowing I had to go in there, and then coming back, and then sitting in it. And there was a moment when I realized, in the midst of all that I was happy. And I thought, this is impossible. Everything my training prepared me for was to not be happy at this moment. And I'm happy. And it was interesting. I was happy because there was life force, there was openness, there were people, there was realness, there was softness, it was alive. And also because I was really at peace in myself. And this was just the stuff to deal with. And in a way, that experience shifted my consciousness about manipulating the universe to be happy. I'll still make it as nice as I can for me. But then, where it isn't, I don't sit around being preoccupied with what isn't. I'm just open to it. And here we go. Here we go. Because the amount of time you create a hell with your own mind because of your attachments to your models of how it should be that are different from the way it is. You can see it in this culture about growing old. You see the model that a person develops about themselves, and then as their body changes, which is inevitably part of nature, how it disconfirms their model and how they suffer. Because I used to do 100 push-ups and now I can only do 70. And there's a deep depression. That interesting. I can't even do one. And I'm not depressed. You should be. The spirit is mediated through ego. It's just a question of how identified you are with it. When you're with another partner that you're really trying to work with, it doesn't mean that you have to extract something from them. It's just that the relationships that are the most exciting are where the contract is to share truth. Many relationships don't have that kind of a contract. They have a contract of, you won't threaten my ego and I won't threaten yours. We'll both feel comfortable. But if the relationship is designed where you agree, when I say to you, will you help me awaken by sharing your truth with me? It may be difficult for me to hear it, but that's the work I will do with myself. And then you say to me, would you help me awaken through sharing your truth with me? Sometimes it'll be hard for me, but I'll work on myself with it. That relationship gets very exciting. That gets loaded. That's juicy. I mean, Jai and I have been friends for many years, and we have that contract. And sometimes it's been hard. There have been moments when his truth to me has been painful for me to work with, as mine has been to him. But we trust each other because we're both committed to awakening, because we both love Maharaji so much, that we take that truth and we keep working it and working with it. It's the same in my relation with Judith, who I've been with for many years. Same way. Now, those kinds of truth relationships are very precious. They're very delicate. So what you do is when you see that stuff in yourself, you can say to the other person, I see how I am manipulating. And you just keep bringing it out. And the two of you bring it out and examine it with good faith. You keep doing that. You keep working and get as close as you can with it. And if the relationship doesn't allow that, then the work has got to be in yourself, or bringing it up and seeing the way you're doing it. I mean, I have a very manipulative quality in me that I have had to work with a lot over the years, to the point where when I see myself doing it, either somebody points it out to me, or I begin to see myself doing it. And then the interesting question is, what do you do with that moment? Do you get into, oh, you're a no good bum because you're doing that again? Or do you just kind of let it go and let it float by? Ah, so there I am again. Manindra, who was one of my wonderful meditation teachers, once I came to him and I was so upset about something. And he says, Ram Dass, don't you see it's just old karma running off? And I really heard that. It's just old stuff out of us running off. Bring it up, look at it, and let it go. Variety of relationships we may enter into that would have a spiritual function. For example, the relationship with the guru, or the relationship with Christ, or the relationship with God. What the situation is that relationship as a vehicle, which is part of what is usually called devotional yoga or bhakti yoga, is something that is very natural to the human beings from where we start from. We start from seeing ourselves as separate, and so we can relate to other beings as separate entities. And then the yoga is to keep going in deeper and deeper into that relationship until you experience the one that lies behind the two. And that is the yoga, or union, yoga meaning union, of relationship. So that, for example, when I start out with my guru, I meet this being, and he loves me, and my heart opens, and when my heart opens, I feel very safe, and I experience love towards him, and then he's in my mind, and then my consciousness, and at first he's a separate entity, and then I begin to experience him more as like a presence around me, and then I start to experience him inside myself. And that's a yoga, or coming into union with another being. When you fall into love, when you fall into the space of love with another human being, their joy is so, it's more important to you than your joy. I mean, at that level, you just yearn to make them happy out of that love. But it's not like falling in love in the romantic sense. It's like falling into love with another human being. And when you do that, you fell from the two into the one. Because the guru isn't really separate from you. That's what's far out about it. Even though it's a different form, it isn't really separate. I recall I was traveling with Swami, who was a very beautiful man, and we traveled around the world together. And then I came to his ashram, and it was a very big ashram, and he sat on a throne, and he had many wealthy devotees and many poor devotees. And he created a little throne for me next to his throne. Thousands of people came to see him, and he made all of these people touch my feet, and there were judges and wealthy people, and they gave me coconuts, and they put flowers around my neck, and he had me have attendants, and he gave me special rooms, and it was really lovely. People came up to me and they said, you know, he's never treated anybody like this before. You had a guru up in the mountains, him, but you know, he was nice to start you going, but this is clearly your master. And I thought about my guru up in the mountains, who had a blanket that kept falling off and a water pot that he did, that was usually, you know, he didn't care. And I said to them, you know, I come from a middle-class Jewish family, and if I could trade my guru in for this guy, I would do it in a minute. Because look, this guy's got a Mercedes. I mean, he's got jewels and furs, and I've got cushy life. I mean, it's absolutely wonderful. But I don't have any choice. It's nothing that my decision-making has anything to do with. The level of this is the level that has... When I arrived at his ashram, at his temple, that temple, I was absolutely committed to Buddhism. I hated Hinduism. I thought it was absolutely schlock and fluorescent lights and day-glow paint, and it was the most garish thing, and I didn't like this chanting. I didn't like anything about it. And I came there, and everything, and they were laughing at me, and everything offended me, and I was it was terrible. And within about an hour, I just couldn't get away from his feet. I mean, I didn't, when I got there, I wouldn't even touch his feet. You don't touch somebody's feet. I'm a professor from Harvard. You don't go touching people's feet. And an hour later, I was so jealous of somebody who was rubbing his feet. Now, what is that about? That was not my rational decision-making mind. I mean, it just didn't have anything to do with it. And it never has ever since then. The relationship between a pure master and a chela is a matter that has nothing to do with the intellect whatsoever. There's no choice involved in it at all. That is such deep karmic unfolding that you are drawn to the master when the moment is right and the unfolding happens totally at a level where when it's right you just So when I'm dealing with that, I feel that something was so true in his being that the deepest truth in me responded to that. And that it bypassed all the circuitry of the decision-making process. Can you hear that issue? That's the level at which surrender occurs. I think you surrender only to truth. And your intuitive heart has to be the final arbiter of where the truth lies, the final judge of where the truth lies. And what you're surrendering to is God in the form of another person. If you intuitively feel that, then you listen and you go as close to surrender as you can go. But you've got to hear that the final spiritual surrender is no surrender. It's a surrender where there's nothing to surrender because the highest thing in the other person is the same as the highest thing in you.
Most relationships are based on a conspiracy to stay separate. It's based on the idea you're you and I'm me and we will interact. We won't merge, we will interact. So the merging is a whole other game that is not part of the usual social contract at all. And when you come together in a marriage or in a relationship with a partner, even that isn't based on merging usually. It's based on a partnership of egos. What marriage has come to be in the West is much more like a special friendship where you take it on and work with it, and then if you both find you're incompatible, you go on to somebody else. And what you usually find is when you keep trading in your partners, the next partner you get, you will slowly make the relationship over into what you had last time anyway. I mean, because these are happening on much deeper levels of unconsciousness. I mean, if you're neurotic in London, you'll probably be neurotic in Paris. You know, it's not like suddenly you're going to move or shift people and it's all going to be roses. You'll still have to deal with the stuff of your attachments of mind. So after a while, you don't really care so much who you're with. You just keep doing it. Most people have relationships that they make as comfortable as they can make and then go do some other yoga like meditation. So the dance, as I said earlier today, is like a triangle in which there is the two that come together in order to know the one, and then the one dances as two. So it's a very vibrating thing. It's the two energies bringing them into the one, and the one dancing as the two. So when you make a marriage that is designed to be a technique to bring you to God, you are using the other person to see through the veil of separateness. So then what do you look at? Because you come together attracted by body or attracted by personality or attracted by comfort or security or whatever. And then through meditation technique, you have to look through that veil to see beyond that and see beyond that. And you practice looking through the veils of other people. And so the art is to extricate yourself from identification with your somebodyness and extricate the person you're seeing from their identification with their somebodyness. So it is really nobody meeting nobody. And then when nobody meets nobody, there is a merging. So your job is to keep working on yourself to extricate yourself from your somebodyness, and at the same moment seeing through the veil of somebody else's somebodyness to the one that lies behind the many.
This is the end of side 6. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up side 5 for your next listening.